So unless you're trying to go, and I think this is, and I really think this is the answer to the question, is that you have to decide, like, are you shooting for a number and a lifestyle, or are you trying to grow something that is bigger than that? And depending on what you, you know, and that's a goal you have to decide. Some people want to grow big enterprises and that's what they want to do. That's phenomenal.
In a crude laboratory in the basement of his home.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today we have a tremendous episode for you, a conversation with Peter McDonald, one of my favorite people in the industry, one of the smartest guys in the industry, the founder of WonderWrite, a tool that we used heavily at my last agency that I highly recommend, that I think is well-positioned for fast-growing agencies, particularly those who are seeing a mix of both direct and, say, E&S or wholesale business that want to make sure that they're gathering the right information, but doing it in a way that delivers an ease of use to their customer that matches that kind of human optimized experience that I preached so much about. But, you know, we're not here to talk about WonderWrite, although Peter does give us an update at the end. Peter is dialed into the industry and just has a very thoughtful and unique perspective. And coming out of both kind of the Boston InsurTech area, which is different than other sections of the country, as well as having gone through some of the well-known incubators and raised money, et cetera, I love Peter's perspective. I love what he's trying to do. I love that his experience is born out of an independent agency, like so many of the most useful and successful InsurTechs are. And just any chance I get, any opportunity that I get to have a chance to talk with Peter about the industry, about all kinds of different things, leadership, growth, entrepreneurship, et cetera, is worthwhile and tremendously valuable. And I know you're going to enjoy this conversation. Before we get there, though, I just want to remind you guys that my consulting firm, my coaching agency, Finding Peak, we will be launching an official program that you can sign up for, be a part of. The first iteration of this is going to be a membership program in which you can come in. We're going to have monthly lectures. We're going to have some coursework that you can take, but really, it's going to be kind of a DIY system for you to build out the three modules of success from an inbound standpoint, being kind of filling the funnel, one call close, and then obviously maximizing the lifetime value of those customers. And that program is going to be open to anybody. You can come in, you can follow the coursework, come to the lectures, be part of the community. That is going to be launching in February. And I'm launching that part of the consulting firm first because this is what Finding Peak's, this the membership part, the masterclass part of Finding Peak. The reason that I want to get this out first, and it's going to be, you know, an affordable price point, is because I'm building this for me when I was 2 or 3 years into the business, when I knew insurance, when I had a good feel for the product, when I had a good feel for what I wanted this career, but I didn't know how to consistently get business in, when I was struggling with prospecting, when I was struggling with branding, with letting people know who I was, what I did, what value I added, you know, that portion, that part of my career. I wanted to make something that was accessible all the way down to that individual, right? So if you're in an agency where maybe, you know, just for whatever reason, you don't have the resources to overinvest in large-scale expensive consulting programs and you like to get your hands dirty, I wanted to make it accessible for that person all the way up to, you know, the top 100 brokerage who has producers that are out in the world that want to build, you know, kind of branded niches and drive business in addition to their outbound prospecting. And this kind of baseline monthly program is exactly what that's going to be. And to get on the waiting list, if you're listening to this before the actual launch, which will be in February, masterclass.insure. Just go to masterclass.insure, put your name, put your email in, you'll be on the wait list. As soon as we go live, you'll be the first to know. Guys, I'm so excited about what this program is. It's a culmination of 18 years of experience, thousands and thousands of conversations. You know, kind of, let's see, I've done 2, 3, 4. I've implemented this program in more than 4 different businesses and in just under 24 coaching clients that I've had kind of on the side that I don't normally talk about and won't talk about specifically just for reasons of being respectful to them. But and then my ongoing learnings as I go, like this program is going to be where as I learn things, as I see things coming, I deliver that information to this group. Couldn't be more excited about it. There will be in-depth programming eventually, you know, down the line. We're going to have take on, you know, kind of a higher level kind of mastermind style where dig in hand-to-hand combat, you know, one-on-one coaching with people. And if you're interested in that, you can always email me at ryan@findingpeak.com. But guys, I couldn't be more excited. I feel that energy coming back. I feel like, you know, helping you guys grow is what I love to do. And I've always found more satisfaction in watching the light come on for others and success in others and being that amplifier or accelerator than my own personal success. And this, what we're building at Finding Peak, I just couldn't be more proud of. So I want to get that in front of you, masterclass.insure. If you have questions, comments, or you're looking for something else, just email me, ryan@findingpeak.com. I'm out on the speaking circuit again. So if I see you at an in-person event, I can't wait for that. And guys, I love you for listening to this show. Let's get on to Peter McDonald.
I'm doing good, buddy. Doing real good. I am coming out of the fog of the holidays and, you know, life transitions, and my house is coming together and life is good, you know?
Yeah, man, you've had a lot going on, haven't you?
Yeah, that seems to be what the universe has lined up for me, so I've decided to embrace it. And and you know, I don't like to complain in general, so I just tend to keep moving forward, and that seems to work pretty well. And if you don't complain, I'm actually reading an awesome book. Have you ever read The Gap and the Gain by Benjamin Hardy?
My dad's talked about it a lot. This is like, I think Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach probably referenced it.
Yes. So it's a Dan Sullivan concept. So there's this really cool series of books that I highly recommend anybody who's like growth focused and like read. And these have been, I've read 2 of them. I'm going to read the third. It's not as high on my priority list because I think it's one of the concepts that I just intrinsically understand a little more. But I read, there's 3 books. So Dan Sullivan has all these ideas, and Dan Sullivan's Strategic Coach is incredible, but it's so much. He partnered with a guy by the name of Benjamin Hardy, and he's a doctor. Well, not the like medicine kind, like the philosophical kind or whatever. And he basically took these 3 concepts and broke them down into a series of books. I'm reading them in reverse order. So the one I read was 10X is easier than 2X, which was my best and number one recommended book for 2023. Just absolutely incredible. And now I'm reading The Gap and the Gain. And then the first one that they did in the series was Who Not How, which people rave about as well. Although, you know, like I said, I just feel like intrinsically that's a concept I understand a little better. But this The Gap and the Gain is really interesting. Because it was like, you know, I'm only 4 chapters in, to be fair to the book. But when they first introduced the concept, it like hit me like a ton of bricks that it like completely defined when I feel good about something and when I don't feel good about something. And the concept is basically we have where we started, where we're at, and our ideal. And what most people do is they measure themselves between where they're at and the ideal, and that's called the gap. And what Dan Sullivan recommends is measuring yourself from the start and where you're at, and he calls that the gain. And that if you're always operating in the gain from saying like, hey, I used to be able to run a 9-minute mile or a 10-minute mile, and now I'm running a 9-minute mile, and even though my best friend can run a 7.5-minute mile, I'm actually a minute quicker than I used to be, and I should be happy for that 1-minute gain, not the fact that I'm still, you know, a minute and a half behind my friend. And
you know, and the reason I like this concept, and then we'll talk about something relevant to why you're on. But the reason why I like it, I read it for like an hour this morning. I like couldn't put the book down. My kids were almost late to school because I was like, I couldn't put it down. The reason I like it is because, and this is what they were getting into, was this idea that, and it's something I've been talking about, success is often just outlasting, you know, outlasting your desire to quit, not necessarily, you know, hitting some mark. And that's really what Dan Sullivan's concept is that as leaders, as entrepreneurs, as growth focused people, when we operate in the gap, we get frustrated, we get, you know, we get depressed, we start having negative thoughts. And that's where we, oh, I'm going to give up or I'm going to make a bad decision. Where in the gain, you're always coming from a place of positivity because you're like, yeah, our goal may have been 300 customers by the end of the year, but we started with 50 and now we're at 275. And even though we missed our goal by 25, geez, we put 225 new customers on the books, and that's pretty darn good. And I just thought that's, that kind of stuff like really just resonates with me. I know it's kind of ethereal, but I like live off that shit.
No, yeah, it's funny. My dad did strategic coach for, I don't know, a decade or something. And he taught me about gapping the game when I was in high school. He'd be like, Peter, you're gapping on me. You're gapping on me. So it's funny because he's been talking about the book. I've never read it. I probably should. But the concept, I think you did a great job explaining at least how I've learned it.
Are you a big reader?
You know, recently, honestly, Ryan, like haven't been. And it's one of those things where I'm like, I should make time for it. I've just been, it's like I have young kids and then the startup, and it's just like, wake up, get the kids off, work, and then kids go to bed, like back to work.
Yeah.
So it's one of those habits where I'm like, I should probably make time for it. I also think like, you know, my brother reads like a book a day, a book a week. I know you're a big reader. I feel like some of the times you read books and you're just like, man, there's so much filler content. Mm-hmm. Like they could just condense these things down to like, you know, a quarter of what's in there. And then I think, and you commented on that thing I posted from Daniel Goggins, because I do read a ton, by the way. Like I'm on Twitter a lot. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm like reading a ton of news stuff relevant to the industry. So I do read a ton, just like not necessarily books.
Yeah.
And I do listen to a lot of podcasts. I love audio. I listen to audio or videos at 2x speed. Because it's just like, it's so much better. But that Daniel Goggins, he's like, you already know what to do. Like, just go do it. Like, yeah. If you're trying to build a business, it's like, just go get those 300 clients. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter if half of them come from cold calling and half of them come from an intro and you know, whatever. It's like, just go, like, you know what you need to do. Just go do it.
Yeah.
And so I do love reading. Man, if I could get into reading right now, I feel like I'd want to read like The Hobbit or something, or like Lord of the Rings. You know, it wouldn't even be like a business book. It'd be like, I need to just escape and unplug.
You know what I read? I read, oh my gosh, not 1984, Brave New World.
I have that right behind me, but I literally had it like on my background, 1984.
Yeah.
Both great books.
Yes. So I've read 1984 a long time ago, just after I finished college, but not for the reasons that I would read it today. I read it mostly for the story, not with the political undertones. I just didn't understand all the complexities that were interwoven into the narrative. Which is a great story. Just if you're not even reading it for like the political commentary, the narrative is phenomenal. I will say, and I almost feel like my understanding of the political undertones of Brave New World wrecked the story for me a little bit. It's a great book, and I loved it. I finished it maybe like
it's like real life too much. You're like, hey, this is like reading the
yeah. Unfortunately, today because. I want to say I hate to say this because I know like every guru success expert is like, don't listen to politics and don't get involved. I do enjoy, so if I go back and do my
it's
like
hard not to.
If I could go back and do my college career again, I would have done economics and psychology because I love business. I love how business works, but I also.
Would you have gone to college?
What?
If you did it again? You know what I mean? Would you have gone to college, you know, if you did it again?
In that day, without the internet, without the access to information that exists today. Now, today, like if I were to go in 2024, would I go to college? If I wasn't playing sports, I would not have gone to college today. I also think that...
It's like a country club. It's like a country club with some, like an academic component and like networking.
Yes. Yeah. I given the option today without sports. So at the time... you know, I've talked a little bit about this. I came from this little shit town of less than 900 people. My parents did the best they can. I was blessed that I had two parents that loved me, but they had nothing, right? So for me, college was like the only way I could envision getting out of that little shithole. So like, that was it. Like playing sports, even though I love them, was like my way out. Getting good grades was like my way out. It wasn't that I loved school. I mean, I did love sports, but like it was how I got out. So back then, yes, just to like escape. But to be honest with you, I love economics and financial shit, and I love psychology. So like I get into politics not so much for like the like my side winning or whatever, like, because I don't really have a side because I flip flopped so many times. If you were to like look at my political register, you know what I've registered? I've been Democrat, Independent, Republican. Independent, Republican, Independent, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Republican. I mean, it's like that. Because it's more for me, like, I just, the psychology of how all this stuff works and like how you could say something and I could say it in the way you look, how you deliver it, the timing, the venue, the color shirt you're wearing, who's standing next to you or behind you, how loud the crowd cheers when you say, all these things impact whether I believe you and don't believe me or believe me and don't believe you. And like, that's what I find fascinating is like, why? Like, why is that the case? I don't know. I'm so intrigued by it.
I think that the smartest people are like the hermits. They're like the prophets who go out into the wilderness and they just shut themselves off. And I know people like this. They're like, don't read the news anymore. Don't watch it because it's all made up.
Yeah.
And they go off and they have these breakthrough ideas because they're not bombarded with the thing of the day.
Yeah.
And there's so many things of the day, and it just gets your blood to boil if you feed into it and you start bleeding all the conspiracy theories that are out there. And I know you and I chatted about like aliens and other things that are out there, but like, I think as a leader, you need to be well-versed in it.
Yeah.
You need to know what's going on with sports. Like if you look at someone who's running for president, it's like they got to throw that pitch to open the game. And like they need to know who's going to the Super Bowl, who's going to the playoffs, who are they rooting for.
Yep.
It's just like one of those things where you kind of have to be, it's almost like you have to be aware of it and operate your business within it without getting mentally sucked into it.
Yeah.
Which is the challenge.
Dude, I think it's seasons of your career, right? When you are in a... Like, I remember the early days, and I'm sure with Wonderwright, it's the same thing. And I want to talk about Wonderwright. I want to talk about the industry a lot. So I don't want to get too – I know sometimes when we get on here and these shows, like, could go off the rails. I want to talk – I'm very interested in some of your takes on some of the things that are going on in the space, and I want to get to that. But
and I have some notes, too, by the way. I prepared
– Oh, yeah. I love it. You know what I mean? I love that. But this idea, and I'd like your thoughts on this. Like, so – in examining my own career, obviously I've had, if like you look at my LinkedIn, you're like, what, you know, I did this podcast. I got invited on this like entrepreneurs podcast randomly by two guys I didn't know. And it was a lot of fun. And they were asking me, they saw the like rogue story of like the startup and the insurance industry. And they were interested in like entrepreneurial stories and what they were calling like almost like Cody Sand, like boring businesses kind of thing. Right. And
yeah, sure.
And it was, and that's where they brought me on. And then they're like, well, give us the 10-cent tour of how you got to here. And I was like, I don't know that I can tell it with 10 cents, but I'm going to do the best that I can. So I broke down like the last 18 years of my life, and the guys got done and they like had nothing to say. And they're like, holy shit, like that's quite the journey that you've been on. And I was like, yeah. So I reflect on that quite a bit. And what I've come to is this idea, and I'm very interested because you are obviously – past initial startup phase, but still feel very much in that startup mode and growing Wonderwright. But I feel like we have to be very intentional with the season of our career. And what I mean by that is in the early days of Rogue, I mean, you couldn't avoid COVID, but other than that, a bomb could have went off in my town and I wouldn't have known, right? I'm 16 hours a day. Like you said, if the kids aren't awake and home, I am at my computer doing some sort of work trying to grow my business. Literally. And I didn't know anything else that was going on. And then as I kind of started to add some employees and hit a next phase, and I don't know that we ever actually, we were almost at escape velocity when Rogue was shut down, but we did get to a point where I had to pick my head up and start to say, what's going on in the industry? What's going on with the economy? What is this hard market all about? How are we going to position our business? You know, like I had to take my head out of like that, what you like that hermit mentality and engage, because otherwise there would be blind spots that I could run my business into. And I think that we have to be very cognizant of that. If you want to be that high level leader of an organization, I don't think you can have your head in the sand. If you want to be that unique, disruptive creator, then going into the woods maybe is the best play for you, and being smart about those things. Does that make sense? And how do you feel about that?
No, 100%. I think, by the way, you talk to any startup founder, and I know you've gone through this, like, there's a season where you need to go fundraise.
Yeah.
People think that you're always fundraising, and that's not true. Like, for the best, it's like you might be building relationships, but, like, honestly, like, the best investors, like, you don't necessarily need a relationship. It's like, if this is a great investment, I want to buy right now. I don't care about the relationship that I've had historically. And so when I go into fundraise mode, it's like all I do the entire day until midnight every day is fundraise activity. Yep. It's like, and I stack my calendar morning to night, meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. That's all I do. You get in, and you get really good at the conversations. They get better every time. You get a sense of the market, and I block everything else out. There's nothing else that I do. I ignore everything. I ignore my emails. I ignore my texts. Nothing. I remember in the earliest days of Wonderite, Ryan, when I was literally coding, I couldn't check my email. I would wake up and I would just code all day, and I'd code all night, every day. And you ignore everything. Like, that's the way that you get to be successful. Yeah. I think the hermit mentality is like, it's like you go out, you shut off everything, and you focus, and that's where you get, you know, the brilliance. But on the flip side, when you come back and all of a sudden you're running an organization, you need to be aware, like, hey, and this is one of the things I'll talk about that I see coming this year, like, what's happening with non-competes? What's happening with pay transparency?
Yep.
These are, like, political issues we need to be aware of. Some of them, it's like, they might be, like, you know, maybe more make your blood boil, where it's more of a current issue, social work setting, layoff stuff that's going on. Like, it's good to be aware of, but it doesn't really impact your business. But, like, if you're an insurance, like, hey, what's happening to non-competes? New York just shut it down.
Yep.
Like, California is accelerating it. Massachusetts, like, what does that mean for me? What does it mean from hiring? So there's things like that are good to be aware of. But for the most part, I would 100% agree. Like, you just got to shut it out of your mind and just focus on what you need to do right now.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I get asked a lot, if your agency was so successful, why did you sell? And there's a bunch of reasons. One reason that I don't talk too much about, because I am not in any way a financial guru, so I do not want to even pretend to position myself as such. But I will tell you that part of the reason that I sold when I did had to do with the fact that I saw hard financial times coming, because I have like a half dozen independent financial journalists that I read. What's up, guys? Sorry to take you away from the episode, but as you know, we do not run ads on this show. And in exchange for that, I need your help. If you're loving this episode, if you enjoy this podcast, whether you're watching on YouTube or you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, I would love for you to subscribe, share, comment if you're on YouTube, leave a rating review if you're on Spotify or Apple iTunes, etc. This helps the show grow. It helps me bring more guests in. We have a tremendous lineup of people coming in, men and women who've done incredible things, sharing their stories around peak performance, leadership, growth, sales, the things that are going to help you grow as a person and grow your business. But they all check out comments, ratings, reviews. They check out all this information before they come on. So as I reach out to more and more people and want to bring them in and share their stories with you, I need your help. Share the show. Subscribe if you're not subscribed. And I'd love for you to leave a comment about the show, because I read all the comments. Or if you're on Apple or Spotify, leave a rating review of this show. I love you for listening to this show, and I hope you enjoy it, listening as much as I do creating the show for you. All right, I'm out of here. Peace. Let's get back to the episode.
They're not MSC. It's not Jim Cramer. It's stuff that I get directly to my inbox. Two of them I actually pay for every month. And I read these things in my downtime because I feel like this cross cut of individuals, you know, give me a good feel for what's happening. And no one ever knows exactly what's happening. But what I did know for a fact back in 2022, something was coming. Right. We had seen some initial rate increases. There was COVID had impacted us in a way. And I was like, you know what? If I don't raise money and or sell this business today, what am I going to be able to do 2 or 3 years from now? Like, what is this going to look like? Right. And we had to make a move because for different reasons. So there were other variables, but it was like And then you see people in 2023 talking about how they didn't see the hard market coming, or what do we do about this hard market? It's like, guys, if you had had your head up, right, and had been, you know, I'm not talking every minute of every day scanning the environment, but if you had been looking a little out ahead and reading some things and being aware of your environment, maybe you could have started position your business in a way, whether you're raising funds or just the products you're selling, how you're setting up your employment or your staff, you know, et cetera. You could have made some adjustments to handle these huge rate increases and some of the disruptions that have come from them. And again, no one can prognosticate what's going to happen in the future. But I do think, to your point, as a leader, we have to. It is mandatory that we every once in a while put our periscope up and see what the heck is going on.
Yeah, I think if you've seen that movie, The Big Short.
Yes,
I think Christian Bale, and he predicts, like, you know, he predicts, you know, basically the mortgage crisis.
Yes,
and he profits from it. And I think that's the perfect example. Like this crazy guy who doesn't wear shoes in the office blocks himself off. And he figures something out that the biggest banks in the country are laughing at him.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, and this is where I think, Ryan, where I think you've done a great job is, you know, being true to yourself. I think you've always kind of looked internally and been like, you know, who am I? What do I want? And I think a lot of people self-censor themselves on their thoughts and whatnot. I think you've done a good job of like, this is who I am and this is what I believe and this is what I know. So I agree. You got to kind of know what you think is coming in the next, you know, year, 2-3 years.
Yeah. Some of that might be the hardcore ADHD, ADD that I have, that I just can't stop my mouth from moving. And if I don't keep it moving at all times, then all those thoughts get bottled up in my head and I start to get crazy. That could be what it is. Who the hell knows? But dude, you took notes. So I'm interested. What did you take? You came prepared. I'm going to let you drive this. What was so relevant to your mind that you wanted to do some preparation on? I'm excited because, guys, in case you don't know, and I will have said this in the intro, we have one of the smartest dudes in the industry on the show today. I absolutely adore Peter and the way his brain works. And plus, on the sneak, when you get a pop in him, he's also a conspiracy theorist, which makes me enjoy and admire him even more. But we won't go there today. We want to talk insurance. So what was the first thing that came to your mind, man? Let's dig into it.
Yeah, I think the conspiracy theories, Ryan, man, I don't believe a ton of conspiracy theories, but I think that you can't believe everything that's on the surface. Oh. And like it's like there's just too many things where it's like, and by the way, I tell my kids this. My kids are in preschool and in second grade, and then even younger, you know, baby. But I'm like, they'll tell me things, and I'm like, why do you believe that? I think a skill that we need is to ask questions, mm-hmm. and to think critically. That is the number one skill you need to learn in school, is like, think for yourself, think critically, just don't accept the answers that are given you. Like you have to think.
Yes.
I think it's okay to, like, when your doctor tells you something, it's okay to be like, hey, net, like, I probably should listen to my doctor. But you got to think critically. So
yeah.
I think that's why conspiracy theories are so interesting, and probably just like, if nothing else, they're just fun mental gymnastics to think through.
That, and most of them have ended up being true recently. So, you know, I think that's the other part.
Exactly.
I love how every Thanksgiving now the meme is it'll be like some guy like walking in all happy, and it'll be like me walking into Thanksgiving dinner with all my relatives who told me I was crazy for my conspiracy theories. You know what I mean? And then it's like the list of all the things that actually were true.
Right.
You know, this is also, so that's basically what you're advocating for. And I completely, I'm with, is like the Socratic method, which is basically just that, continuing to ask why until you can't ask why again. And I'll tell you, I saw Jordan, one of the guys who I think embodies this, and it's why I love him so much in terms of like following him and listening to him. And I don't agree with everything this guy says, but Jordan Peterson, I saw him live this year. Chris Paradiso invited me to an event out in Utah, and I went along.
Wasn't he just censored in Canada or something?
Yeah, Canada is basically a communist country at this point. I can't even stand it. So we went to Utah, and Jordan Peterson was speaking at this event live. And you got to see this dude. I mean, I think you would really appreciate the way he works. I mean, it's cool to watch him on video, but dude, live, he is working through a problem. I mean, obviously it's a problem he's thought about and talked about before, but you can see him literally, he's asking himself, he'll say something And then you can literally see him asking himself, why did I say that? Do I believe that? And then he'll either reframe it or he'll ask himself another question to go deeper. And like, he's basically operating the Socratic method on himself in real time as he works through these thoughts. So by the end, like if you were to take where he starts and where he finishes, it isn't the standard speaker stump speech where it's like, I'm going to start here and then I'm going to say this and then I'm going to say this. It's like he starts with an idea and like he kind of wants to get somewhere over here, but how he gets there and exactly where he ends is 100% based on him working through this process in real time. And it is freaking amazing to watch. And you can tell.
That's cool.
And you just can tell how honest it is, whether you agree with him or not. You could think his conclusion is completely crap and you don't believe it. But what you do believe, and I think this is important for people who are in leadership positions as well, when you work this method that you're describing, people believe that you believe it, which I think is incredibly important. Right? They believe that you are giving them your honest take on this topic. And I think that's almost more important than whether I agree with you or not in today's world, right? Because you just don't know who's telling you the truth.
No. You got to be able to think critically. You got to be able to put yourself in the other person's shoes, mm-hmm. like think through from their perspective, steel man the argument. But yeah, so I think, Ryan, you had texted me. I think I was on like ski vacation with my kids.
Which we're going to do this winter. We are going to get out this winter. I promise.
I've already been out nine days. It's middle of January. I've been out 9 days. And like I went all in. Like, we're doing it. Season's passed. Like, we're going every weekend. But you were like, hey, you want to come on the podcast and discuss what you see happening in 2024? That's kind of the text. And so I'm like, yeah, like, what do I see coming? And then I'm like, what do I see coming? I'm like, it's one of these things where I'm like, I'm the hermit working on the business, like just like in the weeds. And I'm like, dude, I haven't even thought about that. I probably should think about what I see coming. I know what I see coming for my business, but I think like, so when you said like, hey, what notes have I taken? I put down a few thoughts. I think one of the things that I see is data warehouse / data lake. So in the insurance world, every conversation, every top brokerage is talking about like data warehouse, data lake. So for those who aren't initialized, like a warehouse is like, just think of it like an actual warehouse. It's like you have this stuff that lives in it and it's like packaged and like ready to go, ready to use. So if you have a lot of data, package ready to go. A lake is like, yeah, you have this data, not necessarily structured, but it's there. You could use it later at some point. It's like raw data. And I think as agencies, we're all excited about AI. You know, we see it. We know there's a huge potential. We think about voice, interfaces. We think about training AI models. We think about targeting prospects better, identifying prospects better. I think right now you go to the average agency, and I know this because we work with hundreds of them and we look at their data when we do integrations, like the data's a mess. Even at WonderWright, our own sales force, like, do we use New York or do we use NY? Do we use USA or United States? It's like small little things, and you have to go through systematically thousands and hundreds of thousands of records. So I think we have bad data across the industry, maybe a key contact left. There's just a lot of issues. But so if you can get that data in a clean spot, how do you take all that data to run your agency much better? I think for agents, we've had an AMS system like AMS 360 or Epic or whatever. We have a sales CRM, Salesforce or Agency Zoom. And then we have a forms tool like an Indio or a WonderWright. You have a website and web chat. You have photos and videos, you have contacts, like all this stuff. How do you use that to advance your business? I think that the big picture theme is, if you think about the customer journey, how do you make a seamless customer journey for your customers from beginning to end? And it's not gonna happen if you have things living and, well, if you have 20 different systems to make the experience happen, how do you get that data to live and talk to each other? I don't even know. So I don't know how to like make this whole thing work. I just know that I hear this. It's definitely, people are talking about it. They want to basically get a place to have all their data where they, whether it lives in your AMS, whether it lives in your Salesforce, whether it lives in your LinkedIn or whatever, or any correspondence or email, how do you pull that data, extract it, and do what you need to do before you get back to your team or your customer? So that's probably one of the biggest themes that I've heard that I would double down on for 2024. And I don't know how relevant it is for small agencies. I mean, they still have the same challenges. I just don't know how to solve them at scale.
Can I ask you a technical question? I want to ask you a technical question about data warehouse and data. And this is an honest question that I've just always wondered. When it comes to data
quality. And the really kind of specific example that you give, do you use in your AMS, do you use NY or New York or NY State or whatever, right? Like, what do you use in that field? And, you know, you can even see this if you run a report in your agency management system and one of your CSRs is using NY and your producer is putting New York, and you run a report and you're like, where's all our New York accounts? And it's like, oh, wait, we also have to run a separate report for this, right? Okay.
Right.
So, yeah. And again, this is a neophyte. This is a naive question I'm asking. Why is there not Google has like semantic search, right? I remember back in like the early 2012 to 2014, a big leap in search functionality was semantic search, where if I typed New York, Google knew that NY in a page meant New York. So if I typed like best insurance in New York, Google knew that if I had created a video that said best NY insurance, that those were the same thing, that person was asking the same question. That's like semantic search is what they called it. And again, I'm naive, so I'll clean up my speech if you need to. Why can't we do that? Like, why isn't there an algorithm or a bot or something in our industry that you can run through our AMSs and clean that shit up? Like, then it doesn't matter whether Tammy's writing NY and Tommy's writing New York. The semantic, you know, this bot can tell that they're the same thing. Like, I guess what is the holdup to that, or is there, or maybe that exists? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that broadly the issue is economics. I've just come like, if you know, I think you said you're interested in economics, right? Like, you'd study.
Yeah.
If you went back to college, I think the insurance is the prime industry that's driven by economics. You have thousands of competitive companies that, from, you know, a high level perspective, not that it's a commodity product, but it's like, it's more or less the same who you buy it from. Obviously you can have risk management and whatnot, but it's like, there's so much in general commoditization. I know, again, differentiation, you want to sell differentiated process, win through broker of record, etc. I'm not saying that's not fair and true, but it's just like driven by economics, and it's such a vast industry. So, and then it comes down to like the economics of your insurance agency. Like, how much money are you as an agent willing to spend on stuff? And I think the reality is, and I think you actually asked this question when we did the CEO panel back in August at IndyTech.
Yep.
The question that you kind of rudely grabbed the microphone. Well, you didn't know you were supposed to grab
I didn't know I was supposed to not ask live questions. I didn't know that. I said, can I ask a
but
question?
You were like, how do,
sure.
Yeah, but you basically were like, how do you build, and this was for the leaders of, you know, I think Vertafore and Applied and Ivins, you're like, how do you build a product when, you know, a third of your customers or a quarter of your customers are the leading edge customers, but the middle does like, doesn't care, won't care, can't implement.
Yeah.
And I think so the reality is, how many agents out there would raise their hand, like, I want this tool.
Yeah.
And implement it. And if you're listening to this right now, you're like, oh, I would definitely want that. I would want clean data. It's like, well, there's a company right now called Relativity 6.
Yep.
You've interviewed them. Yep. Like, so if you listen to Ryan Hanley, you probably should know about Relativity 6. But they can literally like just tell you like what the appropriate NAICS codes are for mm-hmm. all your customers. Like the end,
yeah.
Programmatically. And so I think that like the tools are out there. It's just the economics of like, are people interested in hearing about them and paying for it?
And the answer is no.
And it's a huge market, but it's also a small market when you compare to like Google's looking at like every business in the world,
yeah.
Not just like insurance agencies in the United States.
You know, it's funny. I love this. So obviously customer journey, all this is like core to what I love. It's, you know, all my work comes back to how do we create this experience for our customers that maximizes their lifetime value for us. So it's not just the virtuous, you know, I want you to be happy as a customer. If you're happy as a customer, it maximizes my lifetime value or your lifetime value. Absolutely. To my agency. So that's why I enjoy this process. That being said, one of the things that I found over and over and over again is as much lip service as we give to data, our industry, I believe, is unique in this one characteristic, is it doesn't matter, right? Like, you write the business with the carrier sends you a check and you cash the check. Does it matter how much data you have on the client? It really, to be successful, now there is a certain level where I think you start to, there's a diminished return on crappy data. But when you're in the early, this is, and I think this is a big part of the problem, is in the early stages when you're grinding it out and you got to sell every policy you can just to put enough revenue on the books to keep the lights on and keep going, to slow down and make sure you have good data quality is not an option. It's just, it's quite literally not an option to move that slow. And then what happens is you get to $500,000, $750,000, $1 million in revenue where now you can maybe exhale a little bit depending on how your operation is set up. And you're like, oh my God, my data is horrible, right? I have some just in carriers, some's in my agency management system, some's just in my CRM, some's in my phone, in text messages, personal text messages to my clients, right?
Right.
And then you go, oh my God, it doesn't matter because I'm making this amount, which I never imagined I would make. And all of a sudden you're like, why I got to spend 50 grand to clean all this up and for what? Right. So unless you're trying to go, and I think this is, and I really think this is the answer to the question, is that you have to decide, like, are you shooting for a number and a lifestyle, or are you trying to grow something that is bigger than that? And depending on what you know, and that's a goal you have to decide. Some people want to grow big enterprises and that's what they want to do. That's phenomenal. I think in that case, stepping back, doing things like cleaning up data, really focusing on customer journey matter. If all you care about is making enough money to provide a lifestyle for yourself and your family, then you don't need any of that. You could run it all off a spreadsheet or off your phone. The carrier's got all the data. You can just log into their back end. You literally don't even need to have an AMS or a CRM or any of it. You have WonderWrite for the forms that you need. The carrier sends you the things in the mail, and that's all you freaking need. I mean, honestly, I don't know that you need more than that to get to.
We need, you know that, you know that. I need to do a meme generator. You know, like the bell curve meme, where there's like the total, like, whatever, loser on the left and the total like whizzed kid on the right with the hoodie on, and then the weird mid guy in the middle.
Yeah.
Who's like the middle. It's like the middle guy is like, I need clean data and I need to spend all this money to clean everything up. And like the guy on the left and the guy on the right of the bell curve are just like, sell more insurance.
Yeah, sell more insurance.
Like, if you want to make more money and run a great business, like, just sell more insurance, right? But on the edges, it's like, or you know, the part about the clean data is like, if you really care about this stuff, like, once you get to $1 million or $2 million in revenue, now it's like, hey, how do I optimize my placement of my book of business? Because I can get an extra point of commission by like getting rid of my bad carriers and only working with the good ones, right?
Yeah.
There's just like so much stuff that you can do. And again, for the most part, it's like if you start to really focus on that and you distract yourself from just sell more insurance, like, you probably could be losing. But that's why I said in the beginning with data warehouse, for the really big agencies that have scale, that point really, really matters.
Yeah.
And so you can afford to employ teams where that's all they think about, customer journey, like optimizing their book of business placement. But the producers, the salespeople, like, they're not necessarily looking at that.
Yeah.
They're just like, how do I sell more business?
And really, they shouldn't be. I think it's the leader. I think it's leadership's job to make those decisions. I mean, I was talking to it wasn't a top 100 broker, but they were probably top 250. It was like a vice president, regional vice president, whatever. We're just chit-chatting. And in his region, they used 4 different agency management systems. So as a producer, you could be in one, you know, in one segment of that region, you could be working on an account in Applied and then have a renewal for another account in Vertifor, and then another one's in or AMS 360, another one's in Sagita, and you're just like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, just think about
that. Data warehouse, by the way.
Yeah.
Because like, I think there's one idea which is like, hey, like, get everybody in the same AMS, and it's like, you know how much people are gonna cry?
Oh my,
like, how
gosh,
many gallons of tears you're gonna have.
It's brutal.
So like, what if you're just like, hey, you know what, let's just keep all the AMSs in like data warehouse.
And I think
the data can live in Sales CRM, it can live in Vertifor, it can live in Epic, who cares?
And I think there's people trying to do this. It is definitely, the agency management systems are fighting it. I think some people have tried to do it with Salesforce. I do not think Salesforce is the tool to do this. It's too big, it's too expensive, and I don't think it's the answer. I do think there are companies out there trying to solve this problem and probably could
if the vendors of the industry wanted to solve it. I'm not just blaming the agency management system,
but,
right?
But let's just talk about your example, right? You're talking about a sales guy. You're like, hey, my sales guy needs to access data from Salesforce, Vertafore, Applied. Like, it shouldn't be that hard via API to pull, like, just basic account info from all three of those systems and put it into one interface. Mm-hmm. Maybe Salesforce as well. Like, well, yeah, but like, if it's, hey, I don't need to have 1,000 fields. I don't need to have everything that ever happened under the history of the sun with this account. I just need to know the account names so that my producer can know, like, whether the account's in our books already.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's some things you can do. So, I'm not an expert on data warehouse. I hear it a lot.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I think the biggest agencies are going after it. 2024, I'd be like, this is probably a theme that's going to continue, is like data warehouse. And I don't know what it means for small agencies, but there's probably a thread there of like, how can you leverage your data across multiple systems? And I think to some extent, honestly, like, and I even chatting with, you know, with Jason Cass, I know he's doing some stuff with tech to kind of like create this whole tech stack and ecosystem where it's basically what he's trying to do is get the tools to talk to each other better. Mm-hmm. So you can have better flows, more integrations. And I think it's kind of a similar idea, is like, you know, integrations. You're trying to have like a unified experience.
Yeah. I think for smaller agencies, less, more accurate data is always the answer. You don't need, like, people are 100%. Like, well, what, I need to have the liability limits in my AMS. Do you really? Do you really need to know the liability limits in the AMS? Because one,
if you're a small agency, all you need to do is sell more insurance. Yes. That's it. And that's literally your job.
Yeah. What policies they have, maybe the policy numbers and effective dates. That's about all you need for the policies. And then basic contact information, et cetera, like, and notes around the account. You don't really need anything more than that to cross-sell, upsell, to service the accounts, and then to know where else to go to write more insurance. Like, and I think we get bogged down sometimes, especially someone who is, you know, growth focused, maybe technology focused, et cetera, maybe younger to the industry, not necessarily young in age, but younger to, and they're coming from another space and they've seen what other industries can do. And they're like, well, I need to know this and that. And it's like, you don't get the basics, have the basics be accurate. And as you said, sell more insurance. If the tool is not helping you sell more insurance, then it's not valuable to you until a certain point, until optimizing your book becomes relevant. So, okay, awesome. I love this. Data warehouse, data lake, structured, unstructured data. I love it. And I completely agree with you. It's an issue of economics. I because I can't not go to contextual when it's there. There was a post on this economic, like, Instagram channel that I follow called Financials Simplified. And it was a graphic meme. And it was 85% of all 85%. Something like 85% of all post-40 research goes into erectile dysfunction, yet only 19% of men have erectile dysfunction, where only 15% of post-40 research goes into PMS and menopause, yet 100% of women, experience PMS and menopause. And I was like, and, you know, and the point of the thing was like, men will pay anything to make sure that this function in their body is operating properly. And it was like, you know, his point, it's a guy that puts this channel together, I think. Inference. I don't know that for a fact. It was just, his point was like, the research goes where people will pay. And if you can't do that function and you're a dude, you will pay just about anything to make sure that you can, and that's why the research was there. It was funny. I don't know. And I saw it 10 minutes before we went live, so that's why it was on my head. Okay. Erectile dysfunction aside.
Maybe you can put that in the show notes for the listeners to go check out the graph.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can be like, what the hell is Ryan talking about?
All right. Okay. What else did you have?
Well, I think the next thing, you know, obviously, you know, insurance just in general, I think like hard market, like that's been a massive change for those of us who's been around for more than 10 years in the industry. Like, we've never seen this before. So I think like that's just a theme. Like, so let's talk through a couple things I see in insurance. So hard market, obviously one with just like the cash in the system. I think like housing, commercial real estate is like interesting. That's already happening. And like, if you're listening, like, you're probably like, yeah, duh. And again, I think that's like an economics problem. because insurance is driven by economics. There's a ton of free, there was a ton of free cash, and now there's not, and there's less capacity, there's less surplus at these insurance carriers. They don't, like, they can't sell as much insurance. I think, like, what are some of the impacts we might see from that? I'd be curious if, like, I'm hearing this actually, that some insurance companies are forcing agents to use portals as opposed to raters. It's been a theme forever, but, like, almost like now it's like, hey, if you come to our website, you're more intentional, mm-hmm. and we're trying to be more selective. And this is, like, now, like, a decision driven by the economics of, like, who's the best client for an insurance company, most profitable, you know, least likely to lose customers. So, like, what are some of the impacts of, like, hard market? What are, like, it'll be interesting to see, like, what the carriers do, because I think if you're an insurance carrier, you need to implement multiple strategies to make sure that you are writing the best economic business. So I think some will be solved with tech. I think that, you know, you're going to see, I know one of my, a person that I know started a venture capital firm focused on wildfire startups. I think you're going to see better, you know, you're going to see some tech out there for better underwriting. I think, you know, the insurance industry has been behind a lot of things like two-factor authentication on computers. It's like, if you don't have two-factor authentication, you can't get cyber insurance anymore, right? If you don't have airbags, anti-theft, anti-lock brakes, you can't, like, get car insurance. If you don't have building codes and sprinklers, like, we can't insure your restaurant. I think in the construction industry, there's so much opportunity to be building better buildings. And I think, you know, you'll continue to see that
yep.
More push just from the economics perspective. I think, you know, self-driving cars... Waymo did over 700,000 trips with no human behind the wheel last year, which it's like no human behind the wheel. And so it's like this thing that has been promised forever is like full self-driving level 5, which maybe, you know, and again, just I guess for high level for the listeners, level 0, no driving automation, right? Level 1, you have driver assistance. It's like adaptive cruise control. Level 2 is partial driving automation. So it's like your car can steer and do the speed control like in a traffic jam.
Like when it pulls you off the rumble strip automatically, right? Like you get a little close and it pulls you back to center.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not an expert on the different levels, but I think it's, more or less the car can kind of steer for you in a traffic jam. Probably like what a Tesla does. Level 3, conditional driving. It's like the car can do all aspects of driving. You can take your hand off the wheel and your eye off the road. That's level 3 in most situations, but you got to be ready if the car beeps at you to tell you to take over. Level 4, high driving automation. It means the car is fully autonomous in most situations. So when I was driving back in a snowstorm, it's like, hey, the car probably couldn't do that, you know, at level 4. But level 5, it's like, no, the car could do full automatic. Don't need to have a driver anymore. Drive you in the snowstorm. Maybe we never get to level 5, but like clearly, when there's 700,000 trips with no human behind the wheel, it's like something is interesting is happening. And when you look at insurance, like I have a whole thing on triggers to shop for insurance. Why do people buy insurance? A lot of the times, most of the times, it's because a government body is requiring you or a bank is requiring you to buy insurance.
Yeah.
So car insurance, you get a car, government requires you to buy insurance. You know, what's the impact of having 700,000 trips and no driver behind the wheel? That's something I think about. What does that mean for our industry in the next 5-10 years? And I think just like electric cars in general, there's a lot of regulation about, I think in Massachusetts, apparently, like they won't be allowed to sell gas cars in 2035, which it's like, it's crazy. Cause you're like, how is this ever going to work? Like the economics going to work of this?
No.
Are there enough batteries that are out there? Are people going to want them? It's like a regulation as opposed to a market demand. But I think like our grid's not ready. You're already seeing issues with like fires from batteries. You know, scooters had the same thing. I know I read in Norway, a shipping company banned electric cars from going on the ferry. And Norway is like one of the biggest purchasers of electric cars in the world. And the ferry operator was like, it's a critical, you know, the risk is too high, basically.
Yep.
And so like if people are like, hey, if you have a bunch of electric cars together and one catches on fire, like this is not good. And so we're in the insurance industry, like underwriting. And it's not just cars. You're going to have the Tesla Powerwalls in the house. I had read recently about a startup that builds a stove that has like a giant battery inside of it, because it can heat your water faster, and it can also like recharge your house when the power is low. Like, so there's just, and it's like, what are the new risks that come from that? So I think, you know, what if you're plugging your car in to be the generator for your house, if you have like one of the new F-150s or whatever? There's just a lot of things with like cars, self-driving cars, batteries, second, third order effects, that it's like, these are going to be questions on your application, right? Like, do you use your car as a generator? Like, that should probably be a question on home insurance and auto insurance if it isn't already. Or, you know, maybe it would in the future. So these are some of the things on the insurance side, between hard market, you know, technologies that can solve it, self-driving cars, EVs, that I've kind of thought would be interesting for 2024.
Yeah, I think I love the idea. And again, I think this goes all the way back to the beginning of our conversation. We were talking about, as a leader, again, if you're grinding out in a production role, and you haven't hit escape velocity in your life yet, don't worry about any of these things. Write more insurance. Like, don't waste your time. And honestly, if you're an entrepreneur starting a company, you're in your production career, et cetera, don't worry about these things. Don't think about these things. Like, right? Think about tactics. Think about strategy. Think about prospecting, you know, et cetera. But if you're a leader,
unless you're a niche specialist, Ryan, I know you love niches.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I love it. Talk about taking a shot. I couldn't help myself. Yeah. I couldn't help myself. We can get to that in a second.
But if you're a niche specialist in electric something with insurance, like, maybe you should pay a little bit more.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if it is your target market, et cetera. But like, you think about second and third order effects. Like, I have, I'm renovating a home that I live in currently. Very excited. Post-divorce, had an apartment, finally got a house, but needed some renovation, doing that. Okay. So something I didn't realize when I purchased the house is that we are actually slightly below the water table in our basement. Now, it's not bad, and we're not in like a high volume water area, but at all times, water is trickling into the home. And, you know, depending on what's going on, every 15, 20 minutes, some pump kicks on, pushes the water out. Okay, great. Don't currently have a generator. It's something I have to do, but just, you know, of all the things I have to do, I haven't got there yet. If the power went out today, in about 5 hours, that would overflow into my basement. So I have a backup battery-powered sump pump as well, which would get me 24-plus hours on the backup. So it's not like I'm completely out to lunch. But the idea here is, look at California, right? As they push towards EVs only, the power grid cannot sustain it. We do not have the capabilities. And because for some reason climate changers won't embrace nuclear, or nuclear, or however you properly pronounce it. I want to do the other way than George Bush, which I always forget what it is. You know, since nuclear power is something that we seemingly can't wrap our head around, there is no way to produce enough electricity for every American, let alone the world, to have an electric vehicle. Not even close. Not even 10%. So like,
or a heat pump in your home, yeah. Or a battery backup.
So when we're talking second, third order effects here, and just things to consider, and that the insurance industry, and this is why I love the industry that we're in, because it's ever evolving to what's coming. So say rolling blackouts become an issue, which, if the Democrats have their way, is most likely going to be in our future. Well, probably all of our establishments, because Nikki Haley would do it.
I mean, just to that point, like, my furnace is breaking, Ryan, and I have a gas furnace, and like, there's big subsidies to put an electric heat pump and an electric water heater in the house.
Yes.
And it's like, literally the government would pay like half the cost and give me 0% loan. If you do gas, it's like, you have to pay it 100%. There's no subsidy. And it's like, okay, like, we have gas. It's already here. And so what you're saying is, we're going to have an electric vehicle. We're going to have an electric heat pump for heat and air conditioning. We're going to have electric heat pump for water heating. All this stuff. Yeah, what's it all add up to?
And if
right?
you don't like, eat your ready. Bug pills, Peter, they're going to turn off the power and you are out. You know, you think about these things.
And if you're paying with your digital wallet that the government controls, and they're going to shut you off like Canada did with the truckers,
exactly.
This is the conspiracy theory part.
This is why you have to bury all your gold around the county in which you live. like Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. No, I do think it's interesting. Like, you look at like areas that have been dammed, right? I mean, again, not to bash California, because not all of this were Democrats in California. Republicans did this too. But what they've done with their water supply and how they've dammed off different water systems and different things have drastically impacted water issues related to California, which, you know, in part
you know, some would say have played a role in some of the wildfires because, you know, rivers don't flow the same. They've changed ecological systems. Okay. I know it's not the only reason, whatever. My point is not who's to blame or what it is, but there are many decisions being made at all times, and there are second and third order decisions. And as leaders in our company, I think that's where we need to spend our time, is thinking what's happening today. And then if X happens, then how do I make sure that my business is set up to sustain such a thing? As something I've been.
But you were going to, I interrupted you. You were just going to say that if the power went out for a certain amount of time, like your house is going to flood.
Yes.
Right?
And that's kind of my thing is like, okay, let's say I'm a homeowner's insurance carrier, and I know that you have some whack job communist Democrat like Kathy Hochul running the state, right? Who has literally said electric gas stoves.
She's the same one who just shut down non-competes, right?
Yes, and it's putting an exit tax into our state. How shitty a fucking leader are you if you have to put an exit tax into your state so that people don't leave? Right, that's another point. But the thing is, she has passed initial legislation.
No, she shut down the non-compete, so they weren't going to be a thing in New York.
Yeah,
I thought like
yeah,
right. That was like a big deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah yeah. I think.
Anyway,
I can't remember if that got beat and it's now being repositioned or something's going on. But oh yeah, this we do. New York is going full communist and. You know, it's working out really well.
I just not to beat a dead horse here, but I thought non-competes. It was going nationwide, and then New York was like, no. Like we need non-competes.
Oh,
I thought Kathy was,
no.
was like, we're keeping them.
No, the other way. I'm pretty sure the big eye of New York was fighting the fact that New York wanted to go. So in California, if you hire a producer in California, which I did not know, I had at one time I had three producers.
No non-compete.
Great guys. Yeah. This is not an indictment of them. Just in doing research and having people in California, which I had never had an employee in California before, they could at any given time say, hey, I'm out, take their entire book with them, move it to someone else, move it someplace else, and there was literally nothing I could do.
When you say take their book, I mean they would have to actually like solicit them, have them sign BORs.
Yes, but I mean I could not go after them for taking their book with them, right? Like, yeah, there's not like a document they signed, but like they could just say, hey, come over. And that would be nothing I could do. New York is headed that way if Hochul gets her way.
And but so yeah, go ahead.
To finish my point on this electric thing. So say you have, regardless, it could be whoever. Say you're in a state that is huge, that's doing all this electric stuff. And you know from past experience, looking at California, looking at some of the Norwegian states, et cetera, that when you over-index on electric, you get rolling blackouts. So now you're looking at your homeowner's book going, oh my gosh, if it's the wintertime in upstate New York and they start getting rolling blackouts, what happens is now you start to have frozen pipe issues, you start to have flooded basement issues, you start to have you get all kinds of shit with the eaves because the water starts to melt because the heat's, you know, the heat issues, and then it freezes underneath the eaves. So like it, you know, this is a second or third order problem to the some legislator being bought by whoever's buying up all these politicians around this electric stuff and saying, okay, we're going to make our state this fully electric by 2035, yet we do not have the infrastructure to do it. You get rolling blackouts and all of a sudden homeowners' claims go up. That's the kind of thing that I think we have to be thinking through. And what makes our industry so interesting is because now that's a problem that we have to solve and protect our clients against, which continually makes the insurance industry relevant and important to the, you know, sustainability of, you know, our lives.
Absolutely. I think like it's not a pure market adoption. It's like an accelerated adoption. And when you have accelerated adoptions, like there's impacts. And I think it's 100%. All these things are pretty interesting. I was chatting with a friend of mine recently. He has an electric car. He's in a condo association. He's like, we need to install hookup pedestals so you can plug your car in. What are the insurance impacts of like installing, you know, electric pedestals in the condo association from a liability perspective? And there's interesting questions. So I think a lot to be aware of. I think, you know, the insurance companies that are out there, like they don't have to ask questions on the underwriting right away because they'll look at the claims data.
Yeah.
But I think you need to be aware of like, hey, high level, what are some trends that are happening? Oh, electrification's a theme. What are some of these second, third order impacts? Oh, let's go reanalyze our claims and be like, was there an incidence of like, you know, was there some sort of data that can tell us about incidents about an uptick in freeze-ups because of heat pump systems failing and not having a backup, something like that.
Yeah.
And like let's go analyze our claims and see if this is like, if there's something there.
And I think you made a point earlier as well. If you're an agent, you can look at these things and say, can I talk to my carriers, find out who maybe is looking out ahead at electric vehicles, electric appliances inside of homes, and become an expert or find some way to prospect these types of people who are building homes this way or are improving their homes in this way? And can I be the agent or agency for that type of client? And I think, you know, again, we can use these things in as both from prospecting and from risk management, et cetera. But I think it's really interesting. Before you go, and I know we're getting close to the number and I want to be respectful of your time, I want to just hear a little bit about Wonderite. I'm a big fan. We were a client for almost 3 years at Rogue Risk. I love what you're doing. I love you as a leader. And I'm obviously always trying to promote Wonderite just because I think it's a great tool for the industry. But tell us a little bit about what's going on and what you're up to.
Ryan, we didn't even get to AI yet, so we'll have to save that for another
day. Yeah, we'll have to come back. We'll come back on AI. Let's come back on AI.
Yeah. Things with Wonderite, you know, they're going great. We have an integration we've been working on with Vertafore, direct integration. And it's in production with a number of agencies. It's really cool to see that we've put a lot of time into it. That's been a big thing we've been doing. And, but yeah, I think, you know, big picture, what is Wonderite for those who aren't aware? It's like the fastest and easiest way to complete insurance applications, supplementals, accords, whatever. You literally just type in the name of the form you're looking for. And chances are we already have it in our forms library. We have over 6,000 forms. And so you can instantly share it with your customer the same way you would share like a Loom video. It's so fast, it's so easy, or anything like a Dropbox. Like you just share the link or you send them an email, they can fill out the form digitally. At Wonderite, I went through this with my own family agency. We bought a bigger, you know, tech, you know, cyber liability policy. I literally was sitting in bed at 10:30 at night, filled out a few quick questions, assigned the cyber questions to my VP of engineering. He answered them, and then I signed the document with like Wonderite's equivalent of DocuSign. It goes back to the agency, and with the Vertafore integration, it can automatically like put that back into your agency management system of records. Like that's exciting. I think that's like a big thing. Another big thing we've had going on is, you know, cross-form mapping. So let's say you are marketing cyber insurance, you fill out one application, you know, with Travelers, because it's a hard market, you want to go to multiple markets, you want to like be the first to market so that you're not getting beat out by a competitor. We can map the data from one form to like five other forms. And that's it's a huge undertaking to get that right, because if you're familiar with like the AI tools that are out there, you have to have like this level of precision, and it's tough to do well. So we built that tooling about a year ago, and we've been rolling it out slowly across our forms library. It's like, that's pretty exciting. As I think about not just filling out like a cyber form, but let's say like a single intake form that isn't even tied to a PDF or a supplemental, but now you can take that data. And this was kind of the whole thesis of Wonderite, is like capture the data once and then use it like infinitely wherever you need it to be used.
Yeah.
And so that's like a pretty exciting thing that's out there.
Yeah, I know, right? Kind of towards the end with Rogue, we had dropped DocuSign and we were using Wonderite as our e-sign tool, which, you know, I know that's not your primary value proposition, but, you know, in conjunction with these forms, you don't, you know, with a lot of other tools, you have to export the forms and then import them into the e-sign and then send them out. And, you know, it was saving us a tremendous amount of time. And to your point, just data quality in different places, we would build everything into Wonderite. And then, you know, any questions we didn't gather in the initial kind of, you know, if you're thinking through, if anyone's been listening to me around my one call close system, right, we try to gather everything we can. Anything we missed, we would send out two or three questions that we needed answered just from the Wonderite form. That would come back, market it. Once we had our, you know, whoever we were going with, bam, we just send it right out of that system back for eSign. And it just created a much easier flow. One of the things that was very important to me, or is very important to me, when I'm bringing on any piece of software technology that I do not think we think about enough, is how easy is it to train my team on this tool? And that was one of the things that I really liked about Wonderite, is that it was like finger snap easy to train. You know, there are tools that are really, really well done. And I'm not knocking anyone else. Like tools that have tons of firepower are great for your agency, but it might take 3 months for someone to become comfortable using the tool. And for me personally, how easy it is to train my team on a tool is a really important data point when I'm making a decision on what to use. And I found that to be the case with WonderWrite. So,
I was just saying, I appreciate you mentioning that. I think like that was something that was critical for us. Even like in the software, we actually wanted something you could try for free, and we didn't have that originally. When you signed up, you couldn't try WonderWrite for free because it wasn't easy enough.
Yeah,
it's actually easy enough now, I think. And so we actually turned on, this is new for us as well, is we have a free trial. You can use WonderWrite for free today for 14 days, and we have we opened a power producer pricing for like one user. So it's literally like we wanted to have something that was the easiest thing to buy. You don't even have to talk to a salesperson. You can try it. And we're seeing really good conversions from people that they sign up, they try it. Because I think when I was at my age, it's like that was like you just want to try it yourself. And if you can figure it out in like 30 minutes, you're like, all right, like let's give this a shot.
Yeah.
So that's like that's something else that's big for us. But yeah,
it's definitely tough to pitch the boss on a tool that you've never actually had your hands on before. You know, like if you've never actually gotten in and used it and you want to bring it to the boss and say, hey, I think this is something we should integrate in the agency. It's almost impossible to make that pitch if you haven't actually had a chance to like get your hands in there and use it.
Yeah, especially in this climate where like there's so many tools. That's another theme for 2024 is like, hey, what tools are going to stick it out? But there's so many tools and like everybody's looking at belt tightening and like, hey, what am I doing with our expenses? Yeah. What are we keeping? What are we cutting?
Yeah, I love it. Dude, well, now I want to bring you back in to talk about the AI thing, but I also want to be cognizant of your time and of the audience's time. I appreciate the hell out of you. I love our conversations. Big fan of what you're doing at WonderWrite, have been from the beginning. And then any chance we get IRL to dive deep into conspiracy theories is also a fun time for me, because you're one of the few people who will placate my absurd viewpoints on certain topics. And I appreciate that about you. So thank you so much, man.
Oh, that's the best. Hey, thanks for having me. And yeah, I can't wait to go deep and, you know, scratch that itch, that curiosity itch, which I think is what it is. It's like pursuing curiosity, yeah, right? And thinking critically. So 100%.
All right, brother. Be good.
All right. Take it easy.
I'm going to Shaboom. Thank you.